The Athletic.
This is Talk the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. Carl Anker is here, Andy Mitten is here, I'm here, Ian Irving as well, and we're going to pick over the carcass of the G-Tech Community Stadium. It was a draw though, wasn't it? Not a 4-0 defeat, but was that performance any better? We'll certainly debate that. We can look forward to Chelsea as well, and we've got some other bits and bobs to round up too. Carl, Andy, we all right? Happy Easter Monday.
Happy Easter Monday, Ian. I hope you've had some Easter eggs.
I actually haven't yet. Perhaps today's the day. Andy's got a cream egg in his hand. Don't eat that just yet, though. You'll make us all jealous. And it is only 9:05 in the morning as well, so maybe it's a little early. Right, should we get into it then? Carl, was that performance worse than when United played there last season and got beat 4-0?
Not in my opinion. I had more than one United fan say that draw was worse than the 4-0. And that draw was one of the worst performances this season. But, and maybe this is because earlier this weekend, I had a look at all the games I'd seen in the flesh. I think that it just is what it is, right? This is United. They concede a lot of shots. The majority of those shots are low quality. They block a lot of shots. They try and smash and grab. And it nearly worked. I mean, I burst out laughing when Mason Mount scored. And when the equaliser went in, I burst out laughing again because for like a different reason. It was like, ha, this is funny. And then it was like, ha, this is gallows humour because I have to not crack open a beer to deal with what I've just seen.
I don't know. What do you think, Andy? Can you offer an alternative view to Carl? Was it worse than last year?
Well, it wasn't because last year was United were 4-0 down inside 35 minutes. But I think context is everything here. United needed to win the game on Saturday. Brentford last year was right at the start of the season when mistakes are allowed to happen. It was doubly important that United won because Spurs and Villa had both won on Saturday. United went into the game on a high after that win against Liverpool, after a really good run of form so far this season. So it was surprising that it was so bad that United didn't turn up, coupled with the fact that Brentford's form has been really poor. Now, yeah, they played really, really well on Saturday. And we spoke at length about Ivan Toney. And it was like he was listening and he wanted to prove a point that he's good enough to play for Manchester United because he was excellent.
Good morning, Ivan.
He had, I think he had as many touches in United's box as the entire United team had in the Brentford box, 16 each, which is a bizarre statistic. But it shows how dominant Brentford were. And it just feels like a crash, a slump, because now when you look at the league table, Spurs and Villa, there's clear water there between the two. And United needed to win the game. Brentford's form has been really poor. I think I saw a stat during the match that since November, Brentford have lost more games or as teams across the top five leagues in Europe since November. But they played really well. And it's pretty alarming because I think Ten Hag is, I wouldn't say fighting, but his job is in play. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly the type of game which United needed to win, or at least convince. It's in London, all your London types are there, they're in the stadium, and United just didn't show up at all. Who played well? Onana? Mason Mount? You know, you're scratching around there. And that midfield, we've spoke about it so many times on the pod. How many chances do Manchester United offer up game after game after game? And that one all, that's a misnomer. Brentford at the woodwork four times. Yeah. Four.
Four. 85 was the number of touches in the Manchester United box that Brentford had as well. The third highest ever recorded in a Premier League encounter for a team. I mean, 193 shots conceded in 2024 in the Premier League for United now as well, more than any other Premier League club. We'll get to the disclaimer that Ten Hag speaks about, Carl, when he says he's not concerned because the team are not conceding goals and they're low quality chances and so on. But the most shots in the Premier League, really, that can be spun into not a concern?
I saw those Ten Hag quotes and he seems to be going to the ends justify the means. Now, Mason Mount gets yourself the winner in 96 minutes. United hold on, win 1-0. We were on this podcast going, look, it wasn't pleasant, but you got to win. You keep the pressure up on the top five, on to the next. Hopefully Casemiro's fit enough for Chelsea, blah, 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 blah. And that's been the vibe from the majority of this year outside of the Liverpool game, which is, this isn't pretty. There's going to be 20 minutes of chaos. United are going to give up between 15 to 20 goals, 20 shots on goal, but you just need to grin and bear it. However, now there's a draw. Now we're going to have a big conversation about the means, which is this worth it? Right? Because even when the wins do happen, I'm in particular going, ugh, this is a bit gross. I know mileage may vary otherwise. And when the wins don't happen, it's really stressful. You're looking at some of these players and they look knackered from just how much space they have to cover because of this man-marking out of possession shape, particularly the wide players. Garnacho, you know, we've talked about how Garnacho runs and runs and runs and runs. Sometimes I feel a bit sorry for him because of how much space he has to cover between the centre back and the wide player. This was made worse by the fact that Brentford played three at the back of wing backs. So the players look knackered. I'm also going to be a bit mean here. Erik ten Hag looked a bit tired as well. So sometimes I just want to go, Erik, are you enjoying this? Because it doesn't look like he is. And it doesn't look like a lot of these players are right now. And it's okay, if you grin and bear it, one, you got to win. And if you don't, then I'm like, is this worth bearing? Is it worth putting up with all this for the next 9-10 games?
It's a good point, Carl, that the impact that the job takes on you.
Mm.
If you looked at Ole Gunnar when he'd left Manchester United, David Moyes, several of them, and look at them 6 months, a year later, and they look like the weight of the world has been lifted off the shoulders. And I saw someone recently who'd just seen Richard Arnold, the former chief executive, and they said he looks so much better because it is such a high-profiled, high-pressure job. And yes, your remuneration is very high, but there's more to life than money. You're getting it every single day from all quarters, and you are only human, and you are best equipped to deal with it because your skill set shows that you're a very good football manager and you've managed at big clubs, etc., etc. But it is non-stop, and then there's stuff coming at you which you cannot plan for, which I think Erik ten Hag has handled pretty well. But the mood is completely set by the first team results around the whole club, and results set that, but performances as well. And it was alarming how poor United's performance was. Players we've been bigging up just not showing up at all. And that worries me. And it worries me going into the next games, Chelsea away. But knowing this Man United will beat Chelsea, Liverpool at home, can we see that again being a win? Oof. At my most optimistic best, I think Liverpool are going to be so vengeful coming to Old Trafford. But then I couldn't see a way for Manchester United to win in that FA Cup game either. And they did. You look at the stats for 2024, they're good. They needed to be good because the end of 23 was a disaster and Ten Hag was losing his job. But Saturday was bad. There is an overreaction to every time Manchester United drop points online, and it does go too far. And a few days later, everyone calms down a little bit. But it wasn't just the result on Saturday. It was the performance as well.
Andy, can I ask? So you said it was surprising how bad United were.
Mm.
Sincerely, why? Because we've seen this sort of game from United a lot this season. We've seen that, oh God, they just keep running through midfield. Oh God, we're really nicking a living here. Oh God, oh, we might have scabbed a win here. Oh God, we haven't. So what made this performance against Brentford surprising in a way that other ones haven't?
It's a good question, and you're right. We've seen it right from the start of the season when Wolves cut through Manchester United, and we've seen it at Old Trafford as well. Why? Because players are coming back. They're not all back. I mean, we saw Casemiro and Lisandro Martinez come off the bench. Maybe it would have been more prudent for Casemiro to start, but I don't know why he didn't start, whether he's not fully fit yet. Surprising because I felt Manchester United were slowly getting onto something, whether that was a return to form. But you are right. You know, Fulham cut Manchester United apart within the last month. Maybe this is just Manchester United under Erik ten Hag. And if it is, it's not good enough. And at some point, you pass or fail your exam. And we've long said, you know, what is success for this season? And at some point, the manager will be judged. And if he gets into the Champions League, especially given all the injuries, I think that is a clear pass. Wins the FA Cup, that's a clear pass as well. But if you don't, then at some point you've got to say this is a fail. And at the moment, it's looking like United won't get into the Champions League position. I've not given up on it yet, by the way, like some people have. But at the moment, it's looking like there's going to be some distance there. Now, Villa have got a much tougher running than Manchester United. But Brentford, on paper, which means nothing, but it does mean something, should have been one of them games where United won.
Yeah, they'd only won four games this season at home, hadn't they, coming into that match at the weekend. I mean, in some ways, I don't know what was worse, the performance over the 90 minutes or the fact that they couldn't hold on to that 1-0 lead after Mason Mount has scored, which just seemed absolutely ridiculous, really, when you've done that in the last minute. And looking at the face of Ten Hag and Steve McClaren, I don't think they could believe what had happened either. I think they were surprised, Carl, in a different way by what happened late on. We'll talk about Mason Mount in a moment, actually, because I think he's an important topic, an important takeaway to get into from Brentford. But you mentioned about Lisandro Martinez and Casemiro being back, Andy. Carl, if we're talking about Manchester United's shape and system not quite working again, surely Lisandro Martinez being back in that team is going to help that be better now, isn't it?
Yes. I think Lisandro Martinez receiving the ball off Onana, who then can pass it to Mainoo, makes that process of build-up just a little bit more seamless. Casemiro, we said it on the last episode, even if you don't think Casemiro is as good as it was last season, he's the best midfielder United have in the air, particularly in both boxes. And against Brentford, I mean, they were volleying in crosses, weren't they?
Yeah.
The wing-backs in particular were coming in, you know, coming in a little bit more behind the midfield to get in crosses. I think it was 7 corner kicks after 20 minutes. And you're like, oh, bloody hell. So that's why you have Scott McTominay. McTominay was good-ish, in that very limited crash-the-box role. So Casemiro helped with United in the air, at the very least, and then hopefully he can find some of his older form and help protect against cutbacks and do all the other stuff that we know he was good at last season but hasn't been as good at this season. Lisandro Martinez will be really, really important to build up. I don't know which centre-back's going to play next to Lisandro Martinez, because Victor Lindelof and Raphael Varane both went off and couldn't complete the game, so it's more changes at the back. I don't think Ten Hag will be pleased with that either. But the concern is United are going to run out of time. There just isn't enough games and there aren't enough fit players for Ten Hag to get his closest team clicking and fit and firing right now. If Lisandro Martinez hadn't have had Koufal fall on him against West Ham, then I'd be a lot more confident about finishing the Champions League. If Luke Shaw hadn't have had to go off against Luton with whatever muscle complaint he had, I'd feel a lot more confident. If Casemiro had been fit for the Brentford game, it hadn't been this. But the fact is, you're always going, in two games, one of these players will come back.
Completely.
Going, we haven't got two games.
Completely. Yeah, and the Brentford game as well, Andy, you know, we've talked about some of the deficiencies in terms of conceding shots and the shape not being right and so on, but they just didn't create anything.
No.
I mean, like, almost zero.
Yeah. And we are running out of time. We're in April now. The season finishes next month. And because of that awful December and the really poor autumn, Manchester United needed to recuperate vastly in the second half of the season. And there has been some, but it might not be enough. And you're almost relying on other teams to fold. Now, Tottenham do fold every single season, but even now, that might be optimistic. But lack of chances, you're totally right. When you see how little Hoyland was in the game, and then he drew that lovely reaction save from Flecken. But we're picking out three or four moments from the entire Manchester United performance. One of them was a goal, which Casemiro pleasingly was involved in. And Mason Mount scored right in front of the away end. And credit to those away fans, because 8 o'clock on a Saturday night is a big inconvenience. And credit to the players. And that idea came from within the club. Go and show your appreciation. Give the fans your shirt at the end of the game. Because most fans are not at the game. They're watching it on TV. You try getting back from London at 10:30 on a Saturday night over Easter. It's really difficult.
Did you see the reverse shot of the home stand when Mason Mount's goal went in? There's a couple of people in their civvies that jumped up and down and punched the air too, as well, which made me laugh just a little bit.
When Manchester United play in London, you get serious numbers there. And it's far more difficult now because most grounds are sold out. But back in the day, and the best example was when Wimbledon moved to Selhurst Park, which held 32,000. Wimbledon's average home crowd was like 5,000 or 6,000. You get 25,000 Manchester United fans turning up there. You'd have whole stands, which were supposed to be for Wimbledon fans, just full of Manchester United fans. We'd sell more fanzines at a London away game than any away game for the whole season. And even now, you go to Fulham and there's Manchester United fans all over the home sections. It's hard. I mean, there will be some at Chelsea on Thursday, but it's harder because it's harder to get tickets now. But yeah, at Brentford were averaging 8,000 a couple of years ago. So their support is not as solidified as Arsenal's or as Chelsea's. So it's a softer ticket, but it's a really hard ticket. That 4-0 last year was one of the hardest tickets of the season.
You wouldn't want to have been sneaking into that.
Imagine that. But so few chances. You're quite right. Marcus Rashford, lively at the very start. An early attempt on goal, which was something because... Even though the stats are totally skewed towards Brentford, both teams actually had 5 shots on goal each, which, and Manchester United actually had more possession. Now, we're not organising a trophy parade because of this, but they are two pretty stark statistics. Garnacho, I thought, made a very limited impression. You need your strikers to turn up. You need your forwards to turn up. Equally, they need service as well. And that game was lost in the middle. Brentford just went time and time again, just ploughing through Manchester United. And it's a game where Kobbie Mainoo will learn a lot from, I feel. Again, he started quite well. There's a lovely turn where he just knocked the ball forward and there's a very early counter-attack from Manchester United, which Bruno Fernandes was involved in. And Bruno had a couple of shots wide as well. And Bruno set up Højlund for that chance after 53, 54 minutes, but far too little because we picked out there just about every Manchester United chance. If we were going to do it with Brentford, this would be a 3-hour podcast.
We'll be here next week.
I do have... This isn't a complaint. This is something that I think might be more important in the weeks to come. So just keep in the back of your mind the relationship between Scott McTominay and Højlund in games. So McTominay in this advanced role doesn't get involved too much in build-up, means Mainoo or whoever is the other midfielder has to do a lot of water carrying, because McTominay's there to crash the box, to really do that. It works because McTominay is better in the air than Højlund. You know, he's a lot more ambitious trying to get onto headers than Højlund. But there are spaces and there are touches that I would like Højlund to receive that McTominay is getting on the end of. And Højlund is young. Højlund is still finding his feet. And there are a couple of times where I'm going, if McTominay could just get out of the way, get Højlund to get on that. So it keeps Højlund alert, keeps Højlund awake. So when the ball does get to him in the more dangerous positions, he can do this. This is a weird balancing act between the two, in that McTominay's having a great season and he's scoring goals at a rate no one really thought he could. But I don't think he can score goals at a rate that will get United into that Champions League position. And you need more from Højlund. And sometimes to get more out of Højlund, you might need to reduce McTominay's role a little bit. This is my opinion. You can yell at me in the comment section on the emails if I'm wrong. But this is just something that I saw against Brentford and I've been thinking about this just a little bit more when I'm rewatching games.
Okay, let's talk about Mason Mount. I just felt sorry for him, really. I mean, what a moment.
Manchester United have numbers forward here. But so too Brentford back. It'll come to Casemiro and Mount! Mason Mount for Manchester United! His first goal for the club!
It's been an awful season, an awful first season at Manchester United for him with all the injury problems he's had. And to get his first Manchester United goal in stoppage time at Brentford to steal a 1-0 win felt like the perfect way to provide a new platform for him to fire on in the remainder of the season. But alas, Andy, it didn't work out that way for him. encouragement though by his cameo, another cameo from him, and something to build on still.
Totally. It was a lovely finish as well.
Was.
And if Manchester United needed a turning point or a high and got it in that Liverpool Cup game, then Chelsea on Thursday, if Mason Mount gets a winner there and it stands as a winner, then it will put a completely different perspective on this season.
But will he celebrate?
Will he celebrate? Of course he will.
You know what the right thing to do, Mason, is? You know what side your bread's buttered on now, my friend?
Jump into the travelling fans and enjoy your moment. Wishful thinking, given how bad we were on Saturday. That calf injury, I mean, he was out from Luton at home in November.
Yeah.
Mm. And even at the start of the season before that, there was another injury. So he started the first two games and he was out for four games and he's had a really bad season through no fault of his own because he's been injured. And we can't really critique him properly because we've not seen enough of him. We're judging him on what we saw at Chelsea. He played well in that Crystal Palace Cup game at Old Trafford, but then he played 90 minutes in the Newcastle League Cup game, which was a stinker for everybody. When people are talking about England, who he's played for 36 times, he's just completely out of the picture, and it's obviously been a difficult time for him. I'd love him to have a successful Manchester United career. We just need to see what he's like.
That was actually the first goal from a Manchester United number 7 in nearly 18 months since Cristiano Ronaldo scored in a 3-0 win over FC Sheriff in the Europa League in, what would it be, October 2022. Anyway, that's just a little aside. You've written recently about Mason Mount, Carl. There's still the question about where exactly he fits in, isn't there? And because he's not been fit, we've not really had the opportunity to work that out yet.
Yeah, and I think this is... United are going to have really big questions in midfield this summer. Because Bruno Fernandes, in my opinion, is so important and also just a bit unorthodox. If you have a team with Bruno Fernandes in it, you have to build around him. And if you have to build around him, he has to be your number 10. He has to be fixed. He hasn't got the ability to receive the ball under pressure and turn with the ball with a defender on his back to be a number 8, in my opinion. He's not a great dribbler. So you've got Bruno, he's your number 10. Which means, you know, Ten Hag came into this season, it looked as if Mount was going to be next to Casemiro. Mount was going to be the evolution, Eriksen. Problem with that is, Casemiro's the form isn't what he was last season, and Mount's been too injured. You come to this phase now, and Casemiro, and we talked about him last week, so let's move on from that. So Mainoo's there now. I don't think Mainoo and Mount works as a partnership. I think both of those two will be overrun by midfields like Brentford's, by midfields that want to whip in loads of crosses. Mount's more of a lover, not a fighter when it comes to the air. You know, he makes an effort, but it doesn't always work out. And Mainoo's, you can chest the ball down pretty well, but he's still got to thicken out. He's still got to, you know, I think Mainoo at 24, we can assess what he's like in the air, but at this point in time, perhaps not. So if that partnership can't work, you go, well, where do you put him? I've spoken loads on this podcast about how I'd be interested to see Mason Mount on the right-hand side, but that option is now gone because the right-hand side seems to be Garnacho's job as well. So I can't find a place for Mason Mount in the starting 11 that gets the best out of Mason Mount and gets the best out of the team. Is that a problem, Andy, when United want to build the squad?
I think the midfield is a major issue for Manchester United because we don't know what it's going to be looking like for next season. Long gone are the days where you've gone, these are your main two, these are your main three, these are your main four. Mm-hmm. So Mainoo, you cut him as much slack as he needs because he was a surprise who came out of nowhere. Eriksen, I've got my doubts. He's not started a game now since in the league, since that Tottenham 2-2 in January. Mm-hmm. He's 32 years old. I don't think he's happy with the number of minutes that he's getting.
He's got 1 year left, has he, at the end of this season?
Yeah. Casemiro, would I be stunned if he left in the summer? No, we discussed it in detail on the last podcast. Bruno, you're quite right. He's the main man. He starts every game. I think the manager has made that absolutely clear. Scott McTominay, I think he divides United fans, but he absolutely has his merits. He's a good squad player at the very least. I see some pretty disparaging stuff about him on social media. I don't pay too much notice of that. But when you add them all up together, nobody's saying this is a midfield that's going to dominate anything. And the midfield has been the area where United have been cut open time and time again, even against opponents lower down in the league. And that is a big worry. And he's got to settle on something. I've asked about this, and I understand the manager has got a very clear idea of how he wants to play, but he doesn't have the personnel to do what he wants to do, which is all very well and good. So he's waiting for this evolution, which is what? Is that okay? Cobby's going to play every single game, but he too might run out of time because he was going to be judged on results as well. And when Manchester United fans see Fulham going bang, bang, bang at Old Trafford and Crystal Palace or Bournemouth scoring three, he can say what he wants. He's just going to lose his job. I thought that Ten Hag's stock was higher in the international break than it has been at any point this season. And talk of Gareth Southgate managing Manchester United was almost laughed off by United fans. It's like, we've got a manager already. But results and performances like Brentford, they take a big dent. You lose at Chelsea and Liverpool, and this probably ain't going to happen because this is this Manchester United team.
It's Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. It's a draw. That game.
But the team, the team doesn't draw, Carl, apart from at Brentford. This is a team that wins and loses, isn't it? I mean, I know it was a draw last year at Stamford Bridge. I thought that game last year was really interesting because for the first time in years, Manchester United took the game to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
Mm. And we're really unlucky. Casemiro got a brilliant late header. He's brilliant in the air. We keep talking about that. But this wasn't United going to Chelsea on the counter-attack or will limit them. This was United. The first half performance was fantastic at Chelsea and they got a draw. Yeah, I can see why you're saying it's going to be a draw, but Chelsea are more unpredictable than United. Their fans are absolutely raging with their owners.
Before the Brentford game, I went to the press conference. They handed an Easter egg, which was a nice touch. And I asked Ten Hag, I said, Casemiro's been injured for 18 games. Mason Mount's been injured for more than 20 games. Have you been able to build the midfield you want? And Ten Hag said, well, it's been tough. But he said he brought up Malacia, he brought up Shaw. He said, I don't want to dwell too much on I can't build my midfield because also there's loads of other areas where everyone's been injured. I then asked him if he still intended to make Manchester United the best transition team in the world, to which he quipped, well, you watched the Liverpool game, there were loads of transitions in there, weren't there? And then he said, it's a process and we're going through a process and we've come out the other side. And it's important not just to do transitions, but to know when to value the ball because we don't want things to end up like a tennis match. If we want tennis, we'll go to Wimbledon. Which I thought, okay, you know, he's feeling confident. He seems to be at least aware of the fears everyone has about these up and down and up and down and up and down midfield occasions. But again, it was there again against Brentford and it will be there again against Chelsea because of the way they set up with this press that asks a lot from the wide players. And it asks a lot from wide players that aren't, I'll be mean here, that are either ill-suited or ill-equipped to press. You know, I'm sure loads of listeners are going to go, it's Rashford. Rashford is not the best off-ball defender. He's not the best at pressing. He's particularly not good at it when he's working down centre-forward. And the amount of space he has to cover when he's going from the centre-back to the opposition full-back, he seems to have problems understanding how to bend and curve his run. This is why, you know, loads of United fans are like, I'm done with him. Let's get him gone. If you're Ten Hag, do you, between now and the end of the season, try and limit the space he has to cover and then ask your fullback to jump up and engage higher to try and limit that impact? And you can also do the same for Garnacho.
Is that why Wan-Bissaka's in the team, Carl?
I think Wan-Bissaka's in the team because there's no other fullbacks.
There's that too, yeah. But using him on the left-hand side specifically.
I think that's the thing. I think that's definitely a way to reduce some of the defensive responsibilities on Rashford, which again, you know, we talk about midfield being a big concern. Fullback is going to be huge this season because, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you've got Dalot as a, yep, that guy's good enough, he's fit enough, and he can play next season. And everyone else now is, there's some form of question mark next to him.
Because Luke Shaw is injured too often. I can see why Aaron's playing where he did. I don't think he had a good game at Brentford. I thought some of his positioning was way off. I can see his merits. You can put him against any player. And Ten Hag tried this with Salah a few weeks ago. And he can man mark. He's brilliant at that. But you're quite right. Dalot, I think, is in contention to be player of the year. But what is going to happen?
He'll win it, won't he?
Probably.
Who else is going to win it?
He's got my vote.
Yeah, I think now he is a favourite. If you would have been asking me a month ago, I might have said Garnacho was pushing, but we're in April now. We're not at the start of March. There's not a long list of eight players, is there, where we're going, definitely him.
At least the keeper won't win it this time. Although second half of the season, he probably would, to be fair.
He's been good. And on Saturday, I thought he was Manchester United's best player.
He was.
It would have been like 14-2 if he wouldn't have been flying into everything and saving. Yeah. So that has been a positive. But no successful team plays week in, week out with a different defence. And that has been a curse for Manchester United this season. It's all right saying we're getting injuries. At what point do you say enough's enough? You know, Luke Shaw has got to be playing 40-odd games per season. He's one of the top-paid players. He doesn't want to be injured. His whole United career has been limited by injuries. The last 3 or 4 years, he has been playing more and more and more, but this year has been a massive setback for him. Malacia, we don't know what's gone on there. And left-back has been the main problem this season. And poor Amrabat has had to play there. Fair play to him for holding his hands up, but you know, you might as well have played there, Ian or Carl.
Completely forgot about Amrabat when we're talking about midfield.
Well, yeah. Yeah, true.
No, I completely forgot, you know. I even wrote a piece about what the options were at Casemiro, and there was the option of Amrabat and Maynard.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, start of the season, I was like, yeah, that'll work. That should work. On paper, that works. And yet, I mean, my eyebrows are just flown up my head just trying to visualise Amrabat and Maynard playing, because unfortunately, Amrabat doesn't seem to have the tempo. He hasn't seemed to quite caught out the rhythm of Premier League football.
It's not, and he's never had that.
Could he have got up to speed of Premier League tempo if he had been given more minutes? I don't know. But at this point in time, Ten Hag doesn't trust him, which is...
You've got to presume that he's not earned the minutes by what he's seen in training all the time. Okay, well, we're going to preview Chelsea in a moment where I'm sure some of these topics will reoccur. But before we do that, there is another Manchester United side trying to keep alive their faint hopes of Champions League football for next season. The women's team beat Everton 4-1 over the weekend, Ella Toon scoring twice in that win. But the 6 points off the top three, Chelsea and Arsenal have played a game less in those top three positions as well. So it's looking pretty slim. There's a new head of women's football who was appointed last week as well on an interim basis, Matt Johnson. Charlotte Harper wrote an article about that if you want to know more. That's on The Athletic now. Going to preview Chelsea. Before we do that, we had a very interesting email from Miles, specifically for you, Carl, actually. So thank you, Miles, for getting in touch. I spotted Mr. Anker at the Thundercat gig on Thursday night, and I made in hindsight the selfish decision to approach him whilst a few pints deep. He goes on to say that he spoke to you, Carl, at the gig, and you had a little chat, but not about Manchester United. So he texted his dad to say, "I've met Carl from Talk of the Devils," to which his dad replied, "Got anything interesting to say?" And I realised I'd evidently let him down by squandering an opportunity to ask anything of interest United-wise. So Carl, for Miles' dad, anything interesting to say?
I mean, hopefully you said loads of interesting things on this podcast. I was talking to Mark Sullivan, MUTV, about Maynou after the press conference on Friday, and we were going back and forth about his emergence. You know, he said, "Oh, you know, he's of Ghanaian heritage, like you, Carl. Anything interesting there?" And I sort of played him a voice note my mum gave me when Maynou first emerged, because my mum, who doesn't know anything about football and constantly mispronounces Marcus Rashford's name, did find it very interesting that someone called Kobbie, like Robbie, Maynou was playing. And went, "Oh, he's Maynou. He's born on a Tuesday." To which Mark found this fascinating. So in Ghanaian tribal culture, the names you get given are also given to you based on the name you were born. So I am a Kwasi Carl because I was born on a Sunday. Kobbie, like Robbie, means he's born on Tuesday. So there's something interesting.
Wow. I wonder if he was. Very interesting.
So he must be then, yeah?
Yeah, Kobbie's born on a Tuesday. That's what he's a...
That is amazing. Well, there you go, Miles.
My mum went, "Oh, there you go. There's his name structure. It means he's definitely got to be born on a Tuesday."
Even I'm now glad Miles emailed in to say, "Got anything interesting to say?" And I hope your dad is satisfied with that, Miles, as well. Remember, you can always get in touch with the podcast, devilspod@theathletic.com. Out of interest, if you were born on a Thursday, what would your name be?
Oh, I should know this one.
Steve.
There was just a tedious link to Manchester United playing Chelsea on Thursday. So don't worry, I'll let you research that car while we talk about it. United need to win again, Andy. It's Brentford rinse and repeat, right?
Yeah, need to win in West London against a team who are supposed to be better than Bournemouth. But Chelsea, 12th best home record in the league. They've won only 6 of their 14 home league games. They've conceded 22 games.
Nearly as bad as Brentford.
Yeah. They've conceded more goals at home than Manchester United. And they concede Chelsea. They give up a lot of chances. It sounds like I'm talking about United here. So if you look at the recent matches, they concede 2 in almost all of them. They beat Leicester in that wild quarterfinal, 4-2. They beat Newcastle, 3-2. They drew 2-2 at Brentford. They beat Leeds United in the FA Cup fifth round, 3-2. 2-2-2. So let's get it clear that Manchester United are going to score 2 goals against Chelsea. It's how many chances Manchester United are going to let up. Chelsea could play a huge part in United's season, not just because of the game on Thursday, but they could be United's opponents, hopefully will be United's opponents in the FA Cup final if United can get through against Coventry, and crucially if Chelsea can beat Manchester City, who they got a draw against at City as recently as February.
A ridiculous draw, by the way.
A ridiculous draw, yeah. I spoke to someone a few weeks ago at United about Chelsea, and they said they think it will all work out, which surprised me. Like this long-term planning, this chaos for 2 or 3 years. And then I speak to Chelsea fans, and there's a really good fan culture at Stamford Bridge. The fanzines there, and you'll see them if you're there at the game on Thursday on the Fulham Road. And they really don't like the new owners. They don't like them because they don't communicate with them. They're worried about ticket prices. And a lot of fans are worried about ticket prices at a lot of clubs. And they really like Roman Abramovich, which is a completely separate argument, whether you should like Roman Abramovich or not. But Chelsea have gone from, you know, first, second, third to 12th, 9th, 8th. Despite spending 50 billion zillions, it's chaos there. They slowly look like they're getting something together. They can choose from 972 players. What do you think is going to happen? I have not got a clue.
United draw at Stamford Bridge, so I'm going to say this one's a draw. Although, I mean, I watched the highlights of the Burnley game, and it was bad from a Chelsea perspective. They genuinely looked like they were hanging on at certain periods against a 10-man Burnley team. They are gettable in a way that a team that spent this much money on players who are this highly talked about shouldn't. I'm a huge fan of Malo Gusto. I think he's the sort of right back United should have been looking at.
He might be missing. He went off with injury, didn't he?
He might be missing. You know, a midfield partnership of Enzo Fernandez and Moises Caicedo should work. However, Chelsea often have a way of making partnerships that should work, not work. I remember getting really excited about Timo Werner and Romelu Lukaku, and that didn't work. Pochettino, I know what a Pochettino team should look like, but also I haven't seen Pochettino teams in a while. This Chelsea team isn't a Pochettino team. The PSG team wasn't a Pochettino team when he was there as well. And yet, there are moments where Cole Palmer gets onto the ball and you're going, oh, there it is. That's the quality. That's the thing that's going to...
Because he's really good. Yeah.
That I wasn't moved by him at the start of the season. I went, it's just penalties. But I took my contact lenses out and I put my glasses on. I went, he's actually mustard. I think this, again, might be a game for Scott McTominay. I think if you play what I can only describe as argumentative football, you should be able to cause enough chaos in that penalty area and that massive rotating cast of centre-backs. You might get a loose touch and McTominay could get there and get a goal. And that's where your 2 goals against Chelsea are coming from. And then what Chelsea can muster on the other end, I don't know. I do know Chelsea are going to have 15 shots on Manchester United's goal. So
at least, yeah.
I think Scott McTominay scored 2 in the game at Old Trafford, and that was one of the best games of the season. That was about the only good point of the chaotic December. Cole Palmer, he scored, didn't he? There's a lovely left foot shot. And he played in that Bruno Fernandes position. If you look at United's formation against Chelsea at Old Trafford, it's quite defensive. It was Amrabat and Scott McTominay as your two holding midfielders, Bruno Fernandes obviously in front, but both goals came from Scott McTominay. When I look at Cole Palmer, I feel slightly envious that this Wythenshawe-born Manchester United fan is now playing his football in West London.
Is he a United fan as a kid?
He's a United fan, yeah.
Was he? I never knew that.
Yeah. Wow. And Wythenshawe, well, we're talking about Wythenshawe because, you know, very important part of Manchester. Their two football teams have got a game today. They're first and second in the league. There's going to be well over 1,000 people there. So this is an area which proper produces footballers. It's more red than blue, but blues will say, no, it's not, no, it's not. Yeah. They reckon it was the biggest council estate when it was built in the 30s out near the airport. I'm sure that every country has a similar claim to fame. But what on earth is he doing playing for Chelsea? Is it Wythenshawe, lad?
I never knew he was a red as a kid. I always thought he was a City fan. I just presumed that. I mean, he's 21 goals he's been involved in this season. I don't feel as bad for liking him now, in a way. 21 goals he's been involved in this season for Chelsea. Scored 13, assisted 8. He's definitely the man to stop. There's no question about that. I mean, it's interesting, Carl, when you were talking about Pochettino before, Si Johnson did a piece on The Athletic over the weekend about, are Chelsea any better a year on from sacking Graham Potter? Obviously, it was Frank Lampard who finished last season as the interim boss, and now Pochettino's had, you know, all the pre-season and this season, and it doesn't feel like they've moved on much. But in an alternative narrative, Pochettino's done really well at Chelsea, and him coming head-to-head with Erik ten Hag is a huge talking point. Only heading to Stamford Bridge this week, it's really not, is it?
It's really not. And
it kind of should be, in a way, for both teams.
And again, I always go back to United beating Spurs 2-0 last season at home. And that was the moment I think a lot of United fans went, I'm really glad I got Ten Hag. We got Ten Hag. I'm really glad it was Ten Hag and not Conte. And I'm really glad it was Ten Hag and it's not Pochettino. And that was the fixture. And Ten Hag, for a large period of time, I think his secret mission was to make sure no one secretly pined for Poch. Poch has done Ten Hag favours because Chelsea haven't been too good this season, quite frankly. But you do get into this weird thing of how quickly a manager's stock can rise and fall in as close as 6 months. I remember saying, in my opinion, Ten Hag was top 10 manager in the world before he turned up at United. And at the end of last season, he's still top 10 manager in the world. Whereas if you ask me now, I'm reassessing everything I've learned from watching Eredivisie games.
I think first is the battle of the terrible goal differences. United is 0 and Chelsea's is only 2. And Chelsea are 11th, but if they win, they go 5 points behind United with a game in hand. Surely we can't be as bad as Chelsea.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah, they've got 40 points from 28 games. United have got 48 points from 29 games.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, Chelsea have only won 11 matches all season in the league, so it's been a... it's been a bad one, but they've scored 9 more than United, but they've conceded a lot more than United as well. I don't think they'll be finishing 11th next season, and I'd like to say catch them while they're still, not firing, like United did at Old Trafford. And funny that Carl mentions that Tottenham game from last year. That was probably the best game of last season. Certainly the atmosphere was rocking at Old Trafford, and you're right, that was when everything was building towards Ten Hag's going to make Manchester United great again. And we're not at that point. We're some way from that point. But get a good win at Chelsea. And I'm just sounding like I'm on a loop here because we're saying get a good win at Brentford at the weekend.
It's such a big week because you've got the Chelsea game and then you barely have any time to recover because it's Liverpool. I was talking about this with a friend online about this current setup Ten Hag has with United. And someone went, well, someone should ask Ten Hag, is this system the best way to overturn Chelsea and Arsenal in the next 3 years? And the more I sit in those Ten Hag press conferences, and I think increasingly since last April, since Martinez and Rafa Varane got injured against Seville, I think Ten Hag has become more and more focused on the next 3 games. And this is why he says the things he says in the press conferences about, don't worry about the amount of shots. It's more about the quality of the shots. Because, I mean, and quite frankly, he's right to focus on the next 3 games. As Andy's pointed out, his job is under soft review. So the next 3 games are absolutely crucial, just like the last 3 games are absolutely crucial. You just got to get through them. At a certain point now, you can't even complain about quality. Just get as many points as possible. Make sure United fans aren't going on Friday morning, oh, maybe we should have got Pochettino instead. I just bang, 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 bang.
This free game idea is interesting and accurate. I remember when I interviewed him in November, it was all about let's get the next three games out of the way. And one of them was actually Chelsea, and one of them was Everton as well, if I'm not mistaken, where United did get a win. But again, at some point you run out of time. A season has a natural start and finish, and after 38 games, people are going to be looking at that league table with lots of mitigation because of the injuries. But it's not just about points, it's about goals scored, it's about individual performances. And I don't think he's got a unified squad. And I think that is an issue for him as well. Mm-hmm. And when fans looked at the Brentford game at the weekend, they're like, where's the spirit? You know, I saw Dion Dublin talking about what would Brian Robson do. And I'm a little bit circumspect when people say, back in my day, because people have been doing that for tens of thousands of years, you know, the youth of today. But there is a point there. Nothing really changed at half time on Saturday, did it?
No.
Brentford were the better team in the first half by a mile and the second half. And there was a little bit when Mount scored. I thought United have still got it in them. They can still, because you've got that individual brilliance where they can counter and score a great goal, and it was a great goal. But you've got to hold on to your wins as well. You've got to hold on to your leads like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Concede 400 chances and then 10 seconds later actually properly concede one. Bang. 2 points down the drain.
Right, we'll leave it there then. But thank you for your company as always on Talk of the Devils. Thank you, Carl and Andy, for being with us. Actually, I feel I've missed a trick on this podcast just before we finish, because Miles' email was brilliant. But Thundercats, Carl?
Thundercat is a Grammy Award nominated jazz musician. So, he plays the double bass and plays some psychedelic jazz.
Where was it? Where was the concert?
It was at the O2 by Old Trafford, Victoria Warehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lovely gig.
Nice.
Lovely, lovely, lovely deep jazz. And the Ghanaian name for a Thursday is Yao.
Yao. Perfect. Well, there we go. Let's see what Manchester United can do on Yao. I know that's not the correct usage, so apologies to everyone of Ghanaian heritage, but you get my point. But yeah, anyway, you go and listen to Thundercat, Carl. Andy and I will go and have a listen to and see what we think. I'll leave everyone to do that. And we'll see you after Chelsea. Thanks for listening as always. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.